So for the last speaker, Mark Daniel, who used to be from Montreal, but now is a professor at University of South Australia. And hopefully, Mark's going to give you a glimpse as to how we're going to, one way to integrate all the data from all these different levels.
Okay, this is going to be a fairly technical presentation, which will describe the tool aspect of how we're going to represent the environment. There's a lot of talk about the environment and different levels of influence, but we need ways of objectively measuring the environment, and that's what I'm going to cover, describing a geographic information system developed here in Montreal that may serve as a guide for measuring environmental factors in a Canada-India collaboration. This GIS has French and English names, but specifically in English, Montreal Epidemiological Geographical Analysis of Population Health Outcomes and Neighborhood Effects. All right. What are we doing here? We're dealing with spatial epidemiology, and what we want to do is understand the causes of disease, the correlates of disease, by looking at spatial patterns of disease, how disease plays out over areas. We relate that to geographic variation in various environmental factors and sociodemographic factors and collective behavior and collective psychosocial attributes. And we do this for the purposes of prevention of disease and control through policy and environmental change. We first have to target the place. We have to understand the place. This GIS is specific to the Montreal Census metropolitan area, which is about 3.4 million people, with some data limited only to the island of Montreal, about 1.8 million people. And it was particularly good to hear my colleague Narendra's presentation, pardon me, because it gave me a sense of the kinds of demographic and geographic issues that we need to deal with in this Canada-India collaboration. What we've got here are two sets of spatial structures that need to be accounted for in this work. You've got context, and that's at the top. You've got someone living in an area, a survey respondent at the top, and we can understand the dwellings then, the nature of the environment, the density of buildings around them. We can understand where they are in relation to places of food, exposures for physical activity, where they are in terms of roads and intersections, land use issues, and finally, at the bottom, we have composition. Now, composition is the collective characteristics of populations as they vary geographically. So if we're going to talk about the environment, we need to consider both context and population composition. The model is quite simple. At the bottom left, you've got environments driving behavior and lifestyle, collective behavior and lifestyle acting back on environments. So behavior and lifestyle and environments are reciprocal in relation to health risk and disease outcome. Each independently and indirectly influences these outcomes. The risk conditions at the bottom are the environmental factors we're concerned with here. So again, you've got context and composition representing what we call risk conditions as opposed to individual level risk factors, which are the things that people do. And these are influenced by their environments. How did we do it in Montreal? We considered that you can indirectly measure the environment. That's through administrative data sources. If it's government census information, that's just fine. It's valid and reliable generally. If you're using other sources of administrative data, commercial sources or public sources, you have to be very careful with the validity and reliability of these data. Most of these databases were not developed for research use. We also have direct measures, and that's where you send people out into the field to actually objectively rate aspects of environments. What we did is compiled into one system a host of different kinds of databases. We integrated them into one relational system, and this was to stimulate research on composition and context, surveillance of environments. Now, normally we talk about surveillance of disease. Here we're talking about surveillance of environmental factors. We wanted to support multi-level, multi-sector analysis, and finally, to support decision-making for policy. The kinds of data we've got, we start with satellite imagery. We can calculate, for example, a normalized difference vegetation index. We're doing work looking at how exposure to parks, the nature of the parks, the greenness of the parks, the area of the parks relates to cardiovascular mortality and risk factors in Montreal. We also use satellite data to determine land use characteristics. And here we see that we can classify areas in the Round Rib. The maps were great. We can classify them in terms of government areas, parks, recreational, resource and industrial, and commercial. We've done work showing that people who live in mixed residential commercial areas actually have the lowest cardiovascular mortality, accounting for a lot of other confounding factors in Montreal. We've also done direct observation studies, sending raters out into the field to rate 30 census tracts on a variety of variables, things you can't get from indirect data. So the cigarette butts on the street, the syringes, the rubbish, all kinds of factors, graffiti, presence of pawn shops, and crosswalks. Okay, these are things you can't get through indirect measures. We've got the complete property valuation roll for the Montreal metropolitan area. So we know about the value of over 400,000 assessment units representing almost 900,000 dwellings in Montreal. I don't know if we can get all these kinds of data in India, but we may well be able to get some of these kinds of data to represent environments. Okay, again, for the built environment, we have a directory of public and private sector businesses and services, about 120,000 such businesses and services across Montreal. We have validated this database. It's a commercial database, but we've done the validity studies, and we're using this to look at how exposure, say, to fast food is related to mortality and cardiometabolic risk. You need also to consider the institutions that are funded by government or privately, educational institutions. Here we have many other such institutions integrated into the database, but we're doing work on schools and fast food in Montreal right now. We've got the complete public transport network for Montreal. We would need that for India. We need to know where the roadways are, the major transportation routes. We need to know about buses, any kind of metros that exist. We also need to know about barriers to those roadways. When I was in Delhi, which was a wonderful experience, the barriers didn't seem to matter. I mean, you would have people crossing multi-lane freeways just as pedestrians, okay? So barriers may not be relevant in India, but they are here. Now, we also have the origin destination survey from the Ministry of Transport. This tells us about people's movements. This is a 5% random sample conducted every 5 years for the Montreal metropolitan area. It's about 150,000 people per sample, and we know where they went over the last 24 hours, what time they left the house, why they left the house, to what destination, where they went from there, the mode of transport. This is very relevant because it can tell us about incidental physical activity in daily living. So transportation systems require people to walk to the bus stop, walk from the metro. We have a PhD student working on this right now. Of course, you have your demographic data from the census. This represents the social environment. We're all familiar with these kinds of variables about household structure, education, income, and so on. We also, though, can describe the social environment in terms of crime statistics. I'd be interested in whether we could get these data in India. We can characterize violent and nonviolent crime. And this is an important part of the social environment as it relates to how people behave. In Montreal, we have complaints data. People phone in and complain because someone pushes a sofa out into the street and it's left there for a few weeks, and then someone has to come along and pick it up from the Ville de Montréal. So all of these complaints are recorded. We've got them geocoded within the system. There probably isn't anything like this. People are probably more tolerant, I think, in India when it comes to this kind of thing. We have voter participation rates. Another aspect of the social environment tells us perhaps about collective apathy, where people don't vote, where they're disengaged from the political process. This is relevant again to how they behave, whether they want to heed health messages or just give up. Finally, we have births and deaths data within the GIS, and we're also integrating data from our partners in research, the individual level data, so that we can do multi-level analysis. So what you've got here in a GIS and what we need to consider for India is the physical and built environment, the infrastructure, what's available to people, and the social environment, the different kinds of data sets that can be used to represent each of these components. We also need to be able to geocode these data, and we have to be able to link them to some health data, and we need GIS expertise in India and Canada to do this. In our system, we structured the data in a relational way. We started with Access and then began migrating to PostgreSQL, This is an open source object relational databasing system. It's very useful for our purposes. We paid particular attention to metadata. This is critical in international collaborations because people often don't have descriptions of the different kinds of data that they're proposing to use to represent different environments. So all of our metadata describing the variables, the coverage, the time of collection, all of those factors are standardized in the way they're recorded, and they're linked to the actual data. So people can search the metadata to understand the nature of the variables in our database. So you have your environmental data. These are linked then to a geodatabase, which is kept separately. This describes the geographic files, the limit files that we use to represent particular environments. The geographic files don't contain data. They're shape files, what we call shape files, defining the different shapes that we need to deal with. We have to deal with different kinds of administrative boundaries. You've got census tracts dissemination areas at the federal level in Canada. These do not fit nicely into the administrative limits of cities, boroughs, or police districts in Montreal, nor do they fit nicely within the boundaries for the health system across the Montreal Census metropolitan area. With the GIS, we can upscale and downscale information, but the geographic files are necessary for manipulating these kinds of data. We keep data on our colleagues, our researchers associated with the GIS, people using it, the products of those collaborations, and so forth. This is integrated within the GIS. We have various tools for spatial analysis. The one tool I need to feature here as relevant to this collaboration is an indicator classification framework that was developed to help us understand what is embedded within the GIS. Now here, when we initially built it, we sorted by, say, social, environmental factors, physical, environmental factors, very crude categories, such as you would see here. We then moved to a more sophisticated relational indicator classification framework. We searched the literature for a year, identified the German social indicator system as the most comprehensive in the world. We adapted that. The German system consists of domains, goal dimensions, indicator groups linking to indicators. So we then have 7 thematic categories within our GIS. That's at the top level of the system. The German system gives us 22 domains, and you can see language, crime and safety, social welfare, traditional activities and cultural responsibilities. All these categories are relevant to international multi-site comparative work. We then take those 22 domains that you see at the second level here. They fall under our theme of sociodemographic factors. The German system then consists of multiple subdomains, including migration, which is a goal dimension then. So there are many goal dimensions subsumed under the domain of population. You then have indicator groups, many of them subsumed within the goal dimension of migration. And then finally, we have an actual measure. Now, in this kind of work, we talk about indicators, and half the time we're talking about constructs. We're not talking about things that are measurable. So we have classified all of the data in our GIS in terms of what indicator group it fits into. So you take overall self-rated health status, that falls within the indicator group of subjective satisfaction with personal health, that falls within the domain of state of dimension of state of health, and so on. We can search, retrieve, and classify our measures. This is very important because I can analyze data and pull out relationships that are quite likely artifactual. We need to understand why we chose that indicator, and we need a systematic way to define what it represents in terms of some theoretical construct. Okay, so we have Megaphone, which is a GIS allowing the collection, storage, retrieval, transformation, and display of spatial data from urban environments in Montreal. We're proposing to adapt this to work with India. It cost about $350,000 to get up and off the ground. 2 people involved me in a postdoc. It became viable 2 years later. It's been used in grants totaling over $12 million so far, over 22 peer-reviewed grants, and we're continuing with the system. We have a web-based portal now for retrieving data. We can indicate, we can work with people to adapt our indicator framework system. The beauty of this is, in India, the measures won't be the same, but they may represent the same indicator group or the same goal dimension. And if we can defensively state that we have used similar goal dimensions representing constructs in our analyses. Even though the indicators themselves differ, we're able to understand how different relationships between India and Canada may differ, and we can postulate as to the policy implications of that, why these environments have different relationships. It's not about status, it's about relationships. Lastly, we started, as I believe we may start with in India, with local files. They weren't linked to metadata. Nothing was standardized, nothing was interoperable, and we couldn't do comparative work. Right, so we built a local area network, and we collected our data, and we linked the data to metadata. This is what would need to happen in India. We created this geospatial database management system. We then developed geospatial web services for this. The whole system can now be accessed through a web portal. Finally, all of our work respects international standards for interoperability and classification of data and metadata, which we would need to do with India. Okay, what we're moving to then is having different nodes of this GIS in different places where the metadata are centralized in Montreal at within the Megaphone Geographic Information System, but the data themselves, the data are decentralized, so they can be in India, they can be in Australia, they can be in Paris for that matter. People keep their own data, they restrict and protect their own data, but the metadata are kept locally, and then we all know by virtue of being able to search through this relational indicator classification system what kinds of data people have in different environments. And I'll end here. As I said, it was technical, and I hope you follow me in these ideas.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. I always learn something new every time I hear him speak.